What we are about to start today is really very simple. When I finish the evening, you may wonder, gee, why didn't anybody see this before or say this to me before? Because it is so fundamental and so simple. However, talking about it isn't so simple. The idea, once you get it, is very simple, but the words you have to use to get there are not that familiar in our society. So I'm going to do most of the talking this period, and I would like to leave you with a sense of why we're going to do what we're going to do, not because that'll help you get there, but because that'll motivate you more to do what you need to do to get there. Grown-ups tend to want a good reason for doing things. Otherwise, they don't want to do it. When I train children in this process, they just do what I ask them to do. They don't ask me why, you know. So it's easier. Well, I'm really glad you're sitting here without a headache today, because that makes it easier to listen. The idea that I'd like to communicate to you is as simple as this. That is, there is a way that you're paying attention right now that causes you to remain stressed, remain in a kind of emergency mode of attention. And that tells your body to support this emergency mode of attention, so your body acts as if an emergency is in process. Even though you have no intention to do that, even though that's not what you really want to do, and you don't even recognize the effort that you're putting into this mode of attention, even though that's true, you end up accumulating tension and stress and not relieving it because of this mode of attention that you're in. If, on the other hand, you were to change your attention from a narrow, objective, gripping attention, which is your style all day long, to one that's more diffuse, more able to pick up peripheral experience, seeing peripherally and hearing peripherally and feeling all around you, as well as your whole body, and tasting and smelling and being aware of your thoughts and the mind, the feeling of mind or space in which those thoughts occur, and having a sense of nowness, a sense of being present in this moment, just a very present moment. If you had that kind of open attention simultaneously and equally being aware of all your senses, then your body would be releasing, diffusing stress and normalizing your physiological function, your mental function. Your body would end up in a kind of homeostasis. I don't know if you're familiar with that word. Do you know that word, homeostasis?
No, I've heard it. I couldn't find it for you.
But it's kind of like, stasis means stable, you know, and homeo means home. So you're kind of in a nice, stable, even, balanced, normalized physiology. Okay. As opposed to one ready to fight or flee, which is emergency oriented. Now, everything in your experience from when you were a baby on up has groomed you into this narrow focus. Our society depends on it. It's the only recognized form of attention, actually. If you're not focusing, there's something wrong with you. You're sick, or you're lazy, or you're no good, or something like that, you know. So even when you were in the crib, they would shake a rattle over you and say, oh, look, he's focusing, you know. And they want focus. And when you talk to people, they want you to look right at them and show that you're paying attention. And there's many, many ways you've been trained to focus like this. In school, work, home, even with your loved ones, they want your attention the same way. So there's many, many pressures to bear in that direction. However, since you spend almost all of your waking time in this mode and you don't take breaks, This form of attention allows the accumulation of stress, of tension, physical tension, emotional stresses and tension. Every kind of stress that you could imagine occurs as a result of the way you're paying attention. And because you maintain it such a long period of time. Okay? It's not inherently bad to be able to focus, obviously. But it is inherently bad to stay in this one form of attention all day long and just turn it to whatever you're interested in at the moment or feel is important at the moment and never take a break and go back home to a way of being which is present, effortless, wide open, even all around behind you as well as in front of you and to the sides, and more immersed. That is, you more into your experience. You actually experience yourself as your experience instead of being separate from it, making an object of it, treating it like altogether independent of you, and then manipulating it in various ways. Okay? Now again, I'm not saying that's terrible to do. It's just terrible to do constantly. And what we're going to start now is a period of training where you'll learn how to go from narrow, objective, gripping attention to diffused, immersed, effortless attention, and back again. Okay, we're going to develop a kind of environment which will support your learning attentional flexibility. Okay? And you'll be surprised to see that lots of your symptoms will just dissipate. Maybe not immediately, although it could. Some clients have an immediate reaction. Depends on how deep and how completely they allow themselves to open their focus and merge with their experience effortlessly. But in time, that's what's going to happen. Now, that will happen even if you only do it during your practice at home 3 times a day. Okay, at home or at work 3 times a day, on the bus or the train or whatever. But you'll get added benefits as you gradually recognize, gee, when I'm home, I don't have to do that all the time. I could, you know, spend more time like this and open focus. And then when something comes up, narrow focus on it and come back. Till you get really comfortable with that at home in many chores or interactions, or you know, while you're watching TV, even you don't have to narrow focus on the TV. You can be aware of everything at the same time, which is a way of letting go. Being aware of everything is accepting everything, and that means releasing all the resistances and avoidances and the repressions that are so much a part of everyone's life in this time. So, how do we bring about this open focus? We have a series of tapes which ask a series of questions. And they ask these questions about space. Let me give you an example. Can you imagine the space between your eyes? Would be, in fact, the first question today will be of that form. Okay, and what it asks of you is to bring as many senses to bear simultaneously and equally to the experience of space between your eyes. So under ideal circumstances, you know, if you were already well trained at this, you could bring to bear a feeling of the space between your eyes, and you can visualize that space between your eyes, and you can hear the silence between your eyes, and taste and smell space between your eyes, and think about the space between your eyes. In fact, even experience your thoughts coming from that space between your eyes, and have a sense of nowness between your eyes, okay? Now, I know that you can't do that. I've been doing this for 30 years now, and I know that no one walks in the door with an ability to do that. They're very happy if they could just do one or two senses of awareness or imagery of that space. And the first one is usually visual, I think. Almost everyone is a visualizer. They immediately jump to visualizing the space. But I want to ask you, starting right now, whenever you hear a question about space, I would like you, if it is your first reaction to visualize it, to quickly, after that imagery occurs, to ask yourself if you could also imagine feeling the space between your eyes. So at least you have two senses going for you, okay? Visualizing and feeling. Okay, now I want to emphasize what I mean by feeling. Would you put your hands on your lap like this? Can you feel, can you imagine feeling now the sense of presence of your thumbs?
Yes.
You can feel your thumbs right where they are. Huh? Can you imagine feeling the space, or could you imagine feeling the shape of your thumbs? Roughly.
Feeling the shape?
Yeah, in other words, you know it's...
I mean, I kind of know in my mind's eye what their shape looks like.
That's you're visualizing.
Right, now, I don't know if I can feel the shape of my thumbs.
Okay, but you can feel where they are, right?
Yes, yes.
And if you wiggle them a little, you get a sense of the kind of shape of your thumbs too, right? A feeling sense, uh-huh. Right? Okay, now just let it stop, and it's still there, right? That feeling of the shape of your thumbs. So you have a rough idea of what the shape is. Inside that shape, you have a sense of presence of your thumb. Outside that shape, in the region around your thumbs, what do you feel?
I don't feel anything.
That's right. That's the feeling of space. You don't feel anything. It's a feeling of nothingness or void or emptiness or a sense of absence. Okay? You know your finger doesn't extend into that absence. The contrast, in fact, the reason you know you have a finger is because you contrast that sense of presence of your thumbs with that sense of absence around your thumbs, right?
Yeah, as I focus on my thumbs, I always feel tingling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good. So you're in touch. You're in touch with them. Good. Now, can you also feel the sense of presence of your index fingers?
Yes.
And their shape?
I'm not sure that I feel the shape. I mean, I know that in my mind's eye I'm seeing the shape. I don't know if I'm feeling the shape.
Okay, imagine that you can feel that your fingers don't extend to the wall, right? They stop somewhere.
Right.
And you can feel some space around these fingers, right?
Yes.
So together, the feelings of space and sense of presence give you a sense of the shape, right?
Yes.
So you can feel the space around these fingers, right? Can you feel the presence of both your thumbs and index fingers?
Yes.
And can you feel the space around them?
Yes.
Can you feel the space between your thumb and index finger on both hands?
So.
Okay. Now, I picked these two fingers because I know you have more cortex devoted to your awareness of these two fingers than you have almost any other part of your body. Your whole back doesn't have as much cortex devoted to its feeling that one of these fingers, your thumb or forefinger, does. And you see, these fingers are very important for prehensile activities, and therefore we've evolved a very, very large cortex to deal with that. Now, could you imagine feeling space between your other fingers as well? Using the space between your thumb and index finger as a model?
Yeah, so.
Good, good. Okay, now, could you imagine that throughout this exercise, you're going to use this feeling of space between your fingers as a model, as an example of how space feels. So when the tape asks you, can you imagine the space in another part of your body? You just imagine that it would feel like the space between your fingers feel, okay? I'm not asking you to try to feel it that way. I'm not asking you to make it feel that way. I'm asking you to imagine what it would feel like if you were already feeling the space, for example, between your eyes, just like you feel the space between your fingers. Did you follow that okay? So your task is to very effortlessly allow your imagination to do all the work, which is, of course, effortless. Your imagination is effortless when it's fully in bloom, right? You're not making things happen. You're letting things be created for you, right? So what's going to happen now as you go through your body and as we develop space around your body and eventually space extending quite far in every direction, what's going to happen is you're unconsciously going to try to grip that because that's what you see as your task, you know, to hold on to that space. But since the space is not an object, not something you can grip to and hold on to, you're going to become gradually more and more aware of the tensions associated with the way you pay attention to space. Because the space doesn't distract you now as it would if it were an object of some kind. You'd focus on it and forget how you were paying attention to it. But now, since space is empty, has nothing for you to focus on, you become aware of how tightly you're gripping your neck, your shoulders, your back, you know, and other parts of your body, your face and head. Okay? And as a result, you're going to say, well, this is inappropriate behavior. I'm going to kind of let down, relax. But you know, you won't even say those things to yourself. It'll just occur on an unconscious level, and you will release a lot of tension in this process. Okay? Now, because there's nothing to really hold on to, you're going to be releasing and you're going to be opening. And your focus is going to open, just what we want to have happen. I'm not going to say you open your focus. I'm going to say just let yourself stay with the exercise and imagine the spaces when you're paying attention, you know, and allowing that awareness of space to unfold, and you will find yourself open, okay? And what's so good about open? Well, I mentioned that when you're open, you diffuse stress and tension, and when you're narrow, you don't. You accumulate it. But I want to say some other things about it. Imagine if some unpleasant event occurred or an unpleasant feeling came up in you and you narrow focused on it. Whether it's external or internal, when you narrow focus on something, that's all there is in your awareness. And therefore, it has a great deal of power over you. It causes your body to react and your mind to react and everything. But imagine if you were wide open. Imagine if you were in a full open focus, simultaneously equal to all your senses and the space in which they occur. And you were just hanging out that way, and then some unpleasant feeling occurred or some unpleasant event occurred. Well, if that occurs in the center, even in the center of this wide open focus, it's only a small part of the totality of experience, which is you. You have all these other experiences, right? So it's not as big a deal. It's not going to blow you out of the water. As a matter of fact, it's going to make it a whole lot easier for you to accept whatever that is, you know, as an experience or philosophically or politically or whatever, okay? So you're going to accept it, and as a result, it's going to pervade and perfuse and diffuse through you and be gone. Okay? So you can think of this practice as building a kind of refuge so that no matter what comes up, you're going to be okay. You know, you can handle whatever happens because you're wide open instead of narrow and pulling away and distracting yourself and resisting this and fighting that. Okay? All of which tends to occur when you have the attention appropriate for emergency. Okay? It doesn't occur when you have the attention appropriate for normalizing your physiology and balancing the systems of your body. Okay? Now, in fact, as you practice, unpleasant feelings may occur. You might feel bored, you might feel impatient, you might feel anxious, you might feel depressed, you might feel all tired out. You know, you didn't realize how tired you were until you practiced. And all of these things are okay. And I'd like you to let them be there when they come up and if they come up. You could also feel very relaxed and wonderful. And I'm going to emphasize the negative side just in case it happens to you. You'll know what to do and you'll know it's not a terribly unusual thing either. Okay? So we're going to proceed with this practice. We have a number of tapes we're going to go through. But if any of these unpleasant feelings come up, we call them release phenomena. If they come up, you just stay with them. You just let them be wherever they are. You don't try to get rid of them. You don't try to encourage them. Just let them be there too. The fourth session, I'm going to start a process of what we call dissolving pain. Any unpleasant experience here could serve as a pain. Okay, we can dissolve anything, as a matter of fact, a visual experience, a feeling, an unpleasant sound you're hearing, or internal dialogue, or taste or smell. There's a way to dissolve any experience you have by adopting the appropriate forms of attention. Okay? We'll start that in the fourth session. So between now and the fourth session, I would like you to just hang out and be here and accept what happens to you. Let it come to you. Don't reach for it. I know you're a go-getter. You wouldn't be where you are if you weren't. But if you could let being a go-getter just be and let it wind down as soon as it, you know, is appropriate, and just be there and let this process come to you instead of you reaching for it. Okay? Now, the last few things I want to say is that if you sit gently erect, you won't be seduced into dropping out or falling out. Okay? If falling out or dropping out were the right thing to do, I swear I'd be teaching you how to nap and, you know, and how to drop out better. But it isn't really. What happens is you go through a nice middle level of arousal where all this normalization takes place. It doesn't take place in sleep. There is some benefit from sleep, obviously, but it isn't going to solve this stress problem. This stress problem needs some special attention on its own. In fact, if you're hyper to begin with, which most stressed people obviously are, if as you start to practice, you come down and you learn to be in this middle level of arousal, that's the ideal. But you won't be able to in the beginning. You'll tend to overshoot, and you'll tend to drop out and nod, and you just keep at it. Make sure you don't stay asleep at all. Sit in such a way that you're most likely to awaken as soon as you nod. And that is gently erect. Okay? Not only is that valuable for that reason, but also because when you're gently erect, you're like you are during the day. And so this kind of training will transfer better into your daily activities. Okay? So you're going to sit gently erect. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes because your eyes tend to be the most grasping of your senses. And I'd like you to put your hands in a palms up style so you can feel the space between your fingers and continue to use that as a model for all the other questions that are being asked about space. And finally, if you could keep from moving the whole time, in other words, if ideally you don't move at all, that would be the best that could happen. Okay? You have any questions about anything I've said?
No.
Okay, you feel you understand it pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, you've hit some points. I mean, my initial reaction as soon as you start talking is to be intense about it. How can I do it best? How can I learn quickest? You know, the kind of things you're talking about.
Yeah, right. And quick is not bad, but effortfully, you know, is going to slow you down. The harder you try to do this perfectly, the slower you're going to get it.
That would have been my reaction. I would try to get it as opposed to see what happened to me.
The real getting of this is letting it come to you. You know, but, you know, you are who you are. You have habits that go way back. So you have to be patient with yourself. You can't demand that just because I said no effort, you're going to immediately be able to do it. You'll do no effort like this. You know, you'll want to drop all the tension in your body, and you'll try to do that, of course, but the trying is effort still. So it'd be better to let the tension be there. Don't try to drop it. Just let it be there also. Let everything be there. Think of it as acceptance time. This is the time I just be and let anything that wants to be there, good feelings, bad feelings, happy, sad feelings, whatever, just be there for a time, okay? And then I can go back to my everyday habit of picking and choosing among things I want to pay attention to. But during the exercise, just being, okay? Not doing. You okay?
Yes.